This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Uhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I'm worried because if they not do something about it now, it might affect my future and others' futures too.
That's 13-year-old climate activist John Femi Tayo, who says he is concerned about the future of the environment in Nigeria and elsewhere. Details coming up. Also, recent coup highlights growing anti-French sentiment in former French colonies. And city by city, town by town, suburb by suburb, South Africa is running dry. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Residents in Niger's capital reacted to President Emmanuel Macron's decision to withdraw the French ambassador and troops from the West African country due to the coup that removed the democratically elected president. The expulsion of the French ambassador from Niger highlights the growing anti-French sentiment in former French colonies. From Niger's perspective, this expulsion is necessary to assert its independence and sovereignty. However, France views it as hostile, potentially damaging bilateral relations. For more insight, VOA's Paul Ndiho spoke with Dr. Edgar Gitua, an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University, Nairobi.
They are treading on dangerous ground. Once they take that direction, international law will not stand by their side. Ambassadors are protected under the Vienna Convention of Diplomatic Relations of 1961. They are inviolable. They are sacrosanct. You cannot touch an ambassador. Even if the citizens are saying that the French ambassador leaves, under international law, the question is, what has he done to necessitate being kicked out? If they give in to that demand, with that military junta there, it means they are legitimizing and accepting the authority of that government, which the French do not accept. The French need to really protect him, because if you remember in Libya, the Benghazi region, the American ambassador died because of these similar sentiments, and then allowing mobs and masses who went and violated the diplomatic space of the American embassy and the American ambassador's residence. And he ended up becoming collateral damage. Under the Vienna Convention of Diplomatic Relations, they know the ambassador is protected. But that is not to say that the mob and the masses in that country are not going to violate or try to, harm him, bring physical harm to him.
To push back a little bit, how about people who say that, for example, that ambassador should be there at the invitation of the Nigerian government?
So a bit of international law and diplomatic practice. The question is, have the Nigerians recalled their ambassador to France? If you want to cut diplomatic ties with a particular country, you first recall your ambassador, all right? And once you have recalled your ambassador, you have signaled intent of withdrawal. And then now you come here and politely and diplomatically, not in the streets, not roadside declarations, you tell him to now declare him persona non grata. Now declare the French ambassador persona non grata and probably give him, or the French diplomatic staff and the consular staff, declare them persona non grata and probably tell them, we have given you a week to get out of our region. That way, because you have also recalled your ambassador, you have already signaled to France the seriousness of that intent.
You make a great point, but the momentum seems to be on the side of the Nigerians rather yes. than the French here. Yeah. And earlier you alluded to that French sentiment that is spreading across the region.
I think those are some of the dynamics that have made the French and the international community to take a back step and try to rethink and reanalyze this entire position. The last thing that we want is French troops on the ground in Niger. And then we have Burkina Faso, we have Mali sending troops in support of their brothers. The French, I think, right now are really looking at, they understand the sentiment. They understand the sentiment that people do not want them in their countries. But I know they are trying to look for a way of saving face even as they exit. But how do we exit and still maintain cordial relations? Because I believe there is room to exit and still keep cordial relations and still continue as trading partners where the French are more, should I say, more fair to the West African nations, where it is not an issue of exploitation, but it's more of the balance of trade is a bit more fair.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Paul. Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
That was Dr. Edgar Gitua, an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, speaking with VOA's Paul Ndiho. Many Nigerians were taken aback when the National Bureau of Statistics reported that the unemployment rate in Africa's most populous country has dropped to 4.1% this year from 33.3% in 2020. Adding to the confusion, a report from multinational consulting firm KPMG forecasts unemployment would rise to 41%. Our reporter in Abuja, Nigeria, has more.
International business consulting firm KPMG says it expects Nigeria's unemployment rate to rise to 41% this year because of the continuing inflow of job seekers into the job market. KPMG detailed the forecast in its annual International Global Economic Outlook report. It said unemployment is expected to continue to be a major challenge this year because of limited private sector investment, low industrialization, and slower economic growth, which will make it difficult to absorb the 4 to 5 million new entrants into the Nigerian job market every year. KPMG's estimate is 10 times higher than that of Nigeria's Bureau of Statistics, which last month said it stood at 4.1%, down from 33.3%. The lead director at Nigeria's Center for Social Justice, Eze Onyekpere, says the Bureau of Statistics rebased the employment template this year to get a lower jobless rate.
If you live in Nigeria and know how serious the situation is, it shouldn't be less than 50%. Maybe they're deliberately trying to withhold that information so that Nigerians don't start shouting.
Under the new measurement standards, anyone who works at least 1 hour a week is considered employed. Previously, the measure had been 20 hours of work a week. Onyekpere says the low figure could undermine the credibility of the Bureau of Statistics. Public affairs analyst Paul Ogwu describes the unemployment rate as a ticking time bomb and says it will remain a challenge until something tangible is done.
When you look at it, there are a lot of things to blame, but most specifically, we have to blame the leadership that is not visionary, that is not thinking in the interest of the citizenry. Our educational system has already been good to bring out a skilled level. Some of the educational certifications are not really attuned to the 21st century requirement.
A former president of the National Youth Council of Nigeria, Solomon Adodo, called on the government to engage more with the youth to bring down the unemployment rate and address the problems that come with joblessness.
It's a worrisome trend, and it's been on building from decades back, but I think it's high time we halted it, reversed it, and built a new order where unemployment figures go down. You can see that the situation we found ourselves where people have resorted to banditry, resorted to terrorism, has been fueled by unemployment.
The last time that the official unemployment rate came out was in 2020 as COVID-19 battered many countries and shut down many businesses. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
At the recent Africa Climate Summit in Nairobi, Kenya, Nigerian officials said they hope to create millions of jobs and much cleaner air through the country's energy transition plan. The initiative envisions Nigeria moving from the use of firewood and coal to natural gas and other environmentally friendly sources of energy. Timothy Obiezu reports from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
Restaurant owner Wumi Adedoyin launched her business in Abuja 4 years ago. She runs the family business with help from her children, but their only source of cooking fuel is firewood. She says they cannot afford cleaner fuels.
Nowadays, people, they know they use firewood again. But as
she says, nowadays, people don't use firewood again, but I don't have money to buy gas. That's why I use the firewood. See my eyes? The smoke is affecting me, but there's no money. Adedoyin often uses cheap drugs to get some relief from nasal congestion and pain in her eyes as a result of constant exposure to smoke. Firewood is the primary source of energy for cooking in homes and many commercial outlets in Nigeria. The country's Statistics Bureau estimates 70% of households depend on it despite health and environmental concerns, including the release of carbon into the atmosphere, one of the triggers for climate change that has left African countries more prone to droughts and flooding. Nigerian officials are trying to change that with government-backed energy transition plans, initiatives that encourage Nigerians to switch from firewood and coal to more eco-friendly energy sources like natural gas. Currently, the government is distributing cooking stoves that burn about 80% less wood than traditional stoves. Officials say they also hope to create millions of jobs through the establishment and expansion of industries related to solar energy, hydrogen, and electric vehicles. This month, world leaders met in Kenya for the first ever Africa Climate Summit to discuss how African countries can achieve green growth, sustainable climate financing, and reduce carbon footprints. And on Friday, Nigerian climate change activists joined counterparts from around the world to demand climate action and compel authorities to give priority to cleaner energy sources. Kingsley Odogwu helped organize the demonstrations dubbed Fridays for the Future.
Now, our economy here in Nigeria is fossil-based, but the dangers associated with fossil fuels, they are more than what we are getting from fossil fuels. We are losing our people on a daily basis as a result of the investments of our leaders and other foreign investors on fossil fuels.
13-year-old John Femitayo says he is concerned about the future of the environment in Nigeria and elsewhere.
I'm worried because if they not do something about it now, and it might affect my future and others' futures too.
Adedoyin and Femitayo say they will be watching to see if the government initiative can change their lives for the better. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. City by city, town by town, suburb by suburb, South Africa is running dry as infrastructure essential to get water to homes fails. Equipment at reservoirs hasn't been properly maintained, some experts say, and it's constantly breaking. Darren Taylor reports.
Many city and town officials are blaming daily power outages for leaving millions of people without water in South Africa. When there's no electricity, they say, the equipment needed to pump water from reservoirs to cities and townships doesn't work. But retired geohydrologist Dr. Gideon Groenewald says this doesn't explain why reservoirs are often empty.
The question is, were the reservoirs prepared for a failure? So were these reservoirs at about 80% all the time? Because that is how you prepare these systems. And it might be that there was not enough foresight in keeping these reservoirs extremely full at all times, because that's how they are designed. The pumps were there, but they weren't run hard enough or long enough, or some of them may be broken over time. These reservoirs...
Groenewald says the water breakdowns are causing great suffering, especially at hospitals. And he says the problem is compounded by experienced water service workers who leave their jobs, leaving a gap in needed skills and knowledge.
People have been leaving the system just pure because they got to the age of resignation and the information wasn't transferred properly from the people who are leaving to the people who are staying. And I have great sympathy with the youngsters who are supposed to run the system to have absolutely no clue how the systems run because they were never taught properly.
President Cyril Ramaphosa's administration says all water officials are skilled and competent. It does, however, accept partial responsibility for both the water and the energy crises. Rand Water is one of South Africa's biggest state-run enterprises. It supplies the country's largest city, Johannesburg, with water. Rand Water's spokesperson, Makenosi Maroa, blames high water consumption by citizens for empty reservoirs. And she notes there are problems with piping, which she says are beyond Rand Water's control.
Rand Water is able to supply water, but around this time, water demand always outstrips the supply. We have even increased the amount of water that we supply. We supply over 4,300 megaliters per day. We are close to 5,000 megaliters per day. We're talking about millions in terms of amount of water that we supply. But still, the consumption is high. Also, the water leaks. There are leaks. There's water that is being let go, obviously, in the streets. That is clean water that is not being accounted for. Rainwater has released it.
But Groenewald and other experts say there's no valid explanation for why citizens would at this stage suddenly begin using more water. They point out that South Africa is not in the throes of a heat wave. They do acknowledge that municipalities around the country are failing to repair water leaks. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Children are returning to class in Morocco's Atlas Mountains less than 2 weeks after a 6.8 magnitude earthquake killed and injured thousands of people there and razed whole villages. With about 600 area schools destroyed, many students will be studying in tents for now or in the nearest city of Marrakech. Lisa Bryant reports from the town of Amzimiz.
Less than 2 weeks ago, Atlas Primary School in Amzimiz was filled with children. Nearly 500 kids studied here. At least 8 died during the late-night earthquake as they slept in homes nearby. Lives and futures suddenly halted. Imad Moulay Otman's children studied here. His dad worked as a school janitor. Otman says he's hoping for a speedy solution for the kids to get back to studying. The family sleeps outside. They're fearful of another earthquake. Otman's children are still traumatized by the quake, which killed one of their classmates. In this poor mountainous region, education can be a ticket to a better life. Teacher Tissam Termi says kids are not dropping out of school like they used to. She says parents are aware of the importance of education. Tissam Termi teaches and lives at a remote village school. Her leg was broken when a classroom wall collapsed during the quake, which also killed 4 of her students. Some of the dead are buried at this cemetery in Amzimiz. He says what's important now is daily survival. Education comes after. Atlas Primary would have celebrated its 100th birthday in a couple of years. Now its pupils and the region face the difficult task of rebuilding and moving on. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Amis Mies, Morocco.
The 2023 World Rowing Masters Regatta ended on Sunday in South Africa. It marks the first time the Global World Rowing Federation has held a competition in Africa. Maryse de Klerk tells us more from Rudelpot Dam, South Africa.
South African gold medalist rower John Smith, who qualified earlier this month for the 2024 Paris Games, participated in the World Rowing Masters Regatta at Rudelpot Dam this weekend.
Rudelpot's always been the foundation for rowing. It's been the facilities we've used for my whole career and all the top rows have rowed here. They've now upgraded the facilities and that's huge for us.
Local master rowing legend, 93-year-old John Price of Rodeplaat Rowing Club, was the oldest African participant at the regatta. His clubmates and family offered support as he competed in a heavy crosswind in the 89-year and older categories.
I'd kept up with the 80-year-old for a long way, and it's only towards the end they pulled away from me.
Yep.
And the other 90-year-olds were maybe way behind, of course. Certainly, as 90-year-olds go, I'm the world champion, I suppose.
More than 1,000 athletes and their support crews from 46 countries, including four African nations, competed. Olympian Sizwe Ndlovu, who became the first African male to win an Olympic gold medal in the sport at the London 2012 Games, joined up with teammates of the Old Eds Boat Club, where his rowing career started in high school. Ndlovu, now the head rowing coach at the University of Johannesburg, said South Africa hosting the world event will benefit rowing in the future.
To have this kind of event in our country, it's good. And we've got a lot of spectators that came through today. And I think people will forever be talking about this World Rowing Masters. And so it will get into the next generation that's obviously coming through. So it's exciting. I think it's a good thing for the sport.
Organizers ensured all professional and technical standards were achieved in hosting the first World Rowing Masters Regatta on the continent of Africa. World Rowing Executive Committee member Patrick Rumbau says that although competing is important, the World Rowing Masters Regatta events are also about an atmosphere of fun, friendship and camaraderie.
No complaint. I had some contacts with participants and jury members, and they are very pleased with what they find. So that's not, I would say, different as somewhere else in the world.
Next year, the 2024 World Rowing Masters Regatta will be held in Brandenburg, Germany. Maryse de Klerk for VOA News, Rodeplaat Dam, South Africa.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, David Greenberg, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. And I'll say like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station.